Back in January, there was this event that happened, kind of gauging kind of where our country's at right now, and maybe a little bit of need of uplift. And the Twitter account for Elmo, the Red Muppet from Sesame Street, we're all familiar with, tweeted a question that seemed to be pretty simple to the general population. And Elmo said, Elmo is just checking in. How is everybody doing? And, you know, thousands of responses come into this post. It's really bizarre. And a lot of people really told Elmo not doing too hot, right? This has been a tough year. Here's maybe some of the responses people said. They said, I'm tired, Elmo. The world is burning around us, Elmo. Elmo, I'm depressed and broke. Others told Elmo they were anxious about this upcoming election this year in 2024. There was a author that responded. He said, each day the abyss we stare into grows a unique horror, one that was previously unfathomable in nature. However, I did have a good grapefruit this morning. Thank you for asking. You know, so Samantha Malton, she is this marketing officer for the Sesame Workshop, and she said, I don't think anyone anticipated how deeply this particular question would resonate. And she believes a lot of the responses as a result of this question that Elmo asked to the world was because of the nostalgic memories of people, especially millennials watching Sesame Street growing up. Maybe they connected with Elmo in this like happy time, and so they felt they could share these really deep personal things with him on Twitter. And so after 9,000 responses in 24 hours, the account posted again, wow, Elmo is glad he asked. Elmo learned it is important to ask a friend how they are doing. So when we think about, like, what does that story, like, really show us, really? It really shows us that when we experience hardships, we are desperate to turn to someone or something for comfort, right? It may look like Elmo on Twitter. It might be an anonymous source online or, like, an advice column or platform that you might use. Maybe it's a counselor or a therapist. It could be your friends, your family, your small group members, right? So thankfully, God has given us the gift of community to help us bear our burdens and vice versa when difficulties happen. But ultimately, what we're going to see in Psalm 46 this morning is that when we experience hardship, God is our refuge and strength. When we experience hardship, God is our refuge and strength. We're going to see in Psalm 46 this morning that ultimately, when we experience difficulty, that we can cry out to God and that he not only listens to those cries, but he desires to answer as well. So if you want to follow along with us this morning, we have some hardback black Bibles underneath the chairs around you. Feel free to grab that and be able to follow along as we continue in the reading of God's word. All right, so our first point this morning is when we are shaken, God is present with us. When we are shaken, God is present with us. All right, so let me start in Psalm 46, verse 1. It says, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble at its swelling. All right, so the psalmist begins by first pointing to God's character, right, in the midst of difficulty, right? He points to God being Israel's refuge and strength. And as the psalmist is writing, the assumption among scholars is that he's writing back to a time in Israel's history where there were hardships, right, where God had shown up in this big way in this very difficult time in their history. And unlike some different psalms where we maybe get like a little blurb of like what's going on underneath the passage, we don't get that this time around. But a lot of the potential options for this psalm is 2 Kings 18 and 19. And you'll kind of see some themes throughout, so bear with me on that. But the story really revolves around the Assyrians. They laid siege to Jerusalem. Right, and so King Hezekiah, he's at this really desperate time where he was advised to surrender. However, King Hezekiah prayed and God answered by sending an angel to strike down the entire 185,000 member of the Assyrian army. So this potential event could give more context into what the psalmist is reflecting on in a time where things were feeling really hopeless, feeling lots of fear and doubt that were surrounding this circumstance. And really praying for God's deliverance in that. And we saw God come through in this miraculous way. And so in that spirit of worship, the psalmist looks to God as their refuge and strength, right? Back in verse 1. All right, so the word for refuge, right, in the Hebrew is the same used for like shelter, right? When we think of shelter, the first things that come to mind is like a solid structure that we use to maybe avoid or shield from like the rain or the snow, or maybe on like a grander scale, like natural disasters or like an enemy attack, right? Like you'd want to get into shelter for that. Right, I love this picture of God that when the storms of life hit or when we experience attack of some kind, right, God is our refuge. He's our safe place, which in conjunction makes him our protector. And when we trust in God, there's a safety and a security that we have in him that we can't find anywhere else. When everything else isn't going our way, when life is crumbling all around us, we're met with the protection of God, right? He is our refuge. The psalmist also says that God is our strength, right? Remember that the author was looking back on this time when things were hopeless. In the example of the story with the Assyrians, right? Israel was completely and totally surrounded by this stronger and better army with way more numbers. They're feeling weak, they're feeling helpless, and again in the story we see God's strength on display. Where Israel was weak, God made up for it in his strength. I love Isaiah 40, 28 through 31. It says, "Have you not known? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He does not faint or grow weary. His understanding is unsearchable. He gives power to the faint, and to him who has no might, he increases strength. Even youth shall faint and be weary, and young men shall fall exhausted. But they who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint." Man, what an awesome promise, right? We see in this passage that God does not grow weary and faint like we do. Right? He's all powerful. He's the creator of the universe. And on top of all that, he's so powerful that God doesn't get tired from anything. In fact, he gives strength to those who need it. We have the hope in a God that desires to give strength, which can only be found when we rest and trust in him. Even in situations where it seems impossible to continue, or how we maybe feel like we'll never get past it, we can trust that God's strength gives us courage and rest that far exceeds anything physical, but also replenishes us emotionally and spiritually. Lastly, in verse 1, the psalmist says that God is a very present help in trouble. You know, the number one thing that people struggle with when they're going through a hard time is oftentimes God's presence, right? Maybe you felt this before. I know I certainly have. But many people kind of question things like, where was God when this happened to me? God is so far from me. I don't feel God near me. I don't feel like he's with me. God has rejected me. Like all of those kinds of like personal questions, right? Of like, where is God in the midst of suffering? But no, we see the opposite, right? I picture this like a police officer or a firefighter who, when everyone else is running away from the chaos or the trouble, right, they're the ones running to the problem to bring about a solution. In the same way, this idea that God is a very present help in trouble, right? It ought to give us immense comfort that regardless of the circumstance or regardless of what we're feeling, even in those times of suffering, we have the God of all comfort who is running to us and is very near to us in those times. We don't have to grieve God's absence when suffering happens, but we can celebrate that God sits with us in the mess. Then when we trust in him, we are indeed safe. We continue in verses 2 and 3. It says, "Therefore we will not fear, though the earth gives way, though the mountains be moved into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble at its swelling." Right, so that word therefore is a connecting phrase going right back to verse 1, right? Because these things are true of God, because he is our refuge and our strength, because he's a very present help in trouble, therefore we don't have to fear, right? All this chaotic language of the earth giving way, the mountains moved into the sea, the waters roaring and foaming. Right, I don't know about you, but there isn't a single part of that language I want to be a part of, right? There's some pretty catastrophic weather, like potentially some earthquakes shaking some things up, or these water storms that would just be absolutely devastating. So when those things happen, like what's our normal course of action, right? Well, first of all, panic, right? It's like freak out, right? What do we do? And then maybe like in today's terms, like a public service announcement telling people to maybe flee their homes, to get out of the area for their safety, to leave everything behind. See, this is no small circumstance, right? We're talking about some really big storms. And the author is giving this imagery of the fear that results in the suffering that we can experience. We know this all too well, right? I mean, the stock market crashes. We fear how our finances are going to look. Maybe there's some aspects of war around the globe that makes us question where God is, or even just in those relationships with America and those countries, like how might that wash into our shore that creates all these fear things and just panic, right? Again, we're walking into a really intense political season in the next few months, right? Like how is the election going to shake up and the outcomes of that? And what are the results? Whatever the circumstances and the feelings that spark from that, we can feel very overwhelming. Yet in the storm, we can look to God as our shelter, as our refuge, strength, and a very present help in trouble. We can trust that though the earth gives way, though everything feels like life is crumbling around us, that he is ultimately in control and knows what he's doing. We can trust him because we know who he is and his character. And when we trust in God in the midst of suffering, the author gives us this picture that when the storms around us are heavy, we can have peace that can only come from God because he is our refuge. And it's in these moments that God comes alongside us and helps us as we lean on him and trust him in the midst of our circumstances. You know, as I was thinking back to really what does it look like for us to put God as our refuge, I immediately thought of the many stories of people that I encounter through my other job at Oasis International. I have the privilege of working with the refugee population in St. Louis. And, you know, a lot of the, really all the refugees that we see coming into this area are on the run from their home country, usually because of war, some really catastrophic events, might be the government outlawing religion or just making things really difficult for people in their home countries. And so we have heard stories of people just in refugee camps for decades and decades feeling hopeless. Like, when are we going to be able to be cleared to go to another country, to a safer place and start over? So everyone that we encounter at Oasis really has a unique story in how they get there. Normally their journey to get to the States is very dangerous. It's oftentimes very unpredictable in terms of timing and kind of the things that they face along the way. And a lot of the refugees that we see at Oasis are Muslim, right? And so the Muslim population, they rely heavily on family and their religion to get them through these times. The only problem is for many of these individuals and families, there is no security and salvation. Much of what they experience has been rendered to this preordained chaotic event that they just kind of have to walk through with zero hope of a God who actually loves them and saves them. On the flip side, we encounter a lot of Christians as well, normally coming in from Ukraine or maybe different countries in Africa. And it's evident that in spite of what has happened for many of these believers, they have this unwavering trust that God is going to provide for them as he already has in getting them to the States. And so in both cases, we see a lot of these situations like the psalmist is describing, right? The earth is giving way, everything is shifting around. The mountains are moved into the heart of the sea. The waters roar and foam. Refugees in all cases have to start all the way from scratch, many of which had a really nice, comfortable life. They had good jobs. They made good money. They lived in nice homes. And so oftentimes their situations look the exact same. They're fleeing horrific situations. Yet their difference is in the fact that the Christians have their hope ultimately in Christ, who is their refuge, their ultimate refuge and strength and very present help in trouble. And for us as Americans, right, we struggle to kind of have the same level of reliance on God because we haven't experienced that level of chaos maybe on a physical scale. But we know that we experience different levels of chaos in our own lives, right? Like maybe you're in a difficult season of your marriage or your family. Maybe your health struggles are really overwhelming. Maybe there's a sin struggle that you're having a hard time finding victory in. My question for you this morning is, what do I turn to for refuge? What are the things you seek for comfort or try to find some sense of normalcy or calm when the storms of life have shaken you? What do I turn to for refuge? My prayer is that we would all look to Christ, who is not distant or passive when we are shaken, but in turn, who is active and is a very present help in trouble, in whom we can ultimately experience and place our refuge in. All right, so when we're shaken, God is our refuge and strength. Our second point, when we are powerless, God empowers us. When we are powerless, God empowers us. Let's continue on in verse 4. It says, there is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. The nations rage, the kingdoms totter. He utters his voice, the earth melts. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. All right, so we got a glimpse of the idea that God is present with us, as we saw back in verse 1, right? But the psalmist continues with this idea a little bit further as we kind of transition into God's power. And we pick back up in 4 and 5, right? He says, there's a river, right, whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. So the psalmist, again, is reminded of how God is his refuge and strength, this very present help in trouble, despite the circumstances around him. We see in these verses that the psalmist references Jerusalem here as he speaks of the city of God being the holy habitation of the Most High. Jerusalem means literally the city of peace. And especially in the Old Testament, it was believed to be where God's presence dwelled with his people. And so he gives us this picture of a river, right? And there's maybe two ways to kind of see that, how this river and its streams make glad Jerusalem where God dwells. So rivers were often thought to be symbols of abundance or peace. And so there's two ways to see it, right? This could be a literal river flowing through Jerusalem to give this picture that even though there's all of this chaos surrounding the author, he's seeing this physical reminder of God's peace in the midst, which reminds him of these truths of God going back to verse 1. It could also be that as we look ahead to verse 5 and kind of verbiage like, God is in the midst of her, she shall not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. The author is clearly speaking of Israel, right? So this river could be more figurative as the psalmist is speaking more on God's presence, and that his presence acts more like this symbol of a river, bringing peace and security that no matter what Israel faces, they can look to God's power to bring that security and the peace in the midst of their circumstance. But regardless, it's clear that God is the main focus here, right? That he is the one who is bringing that peace and security, right? He is all powerful. Though the earth gives way and chaos surrounds the psalmist, he looks to God who is present in the midst of Israel and will help her when the morning dawns. And even that phrasing, right, when God will help her when morning dawns is, again, that picture of 2 Kings 18 and 19, right? This referring to the story, right, the Assyrians, they're surrounding Israel. They're even telling Israel, like, to abandon all hope, right? They've conquered all these nations and all their gods didn't come through. So what makes Israel different, right? Challenging God himself. And so Hezekiah, he receives this letter, right? He's praying for deliverance and then the morning dawns and the Lord answers Hezekiah's prayer, right? He strikes down all the Assyrian soldiers. So as the psalmist is writing, right, there's this memory of him looking back on a time where things were totally powerless. They felt hopeless. And how God delivered and helped Israel at a time where they were desperate for him to move. So as we kind of think about God's presence moving into his power, we see that even more in 6 and 7. The nations rage, the kingdoms totter, he utters his voice, the earth melts. The Lord of hosts is with us, the God of Jacob is our fortress. Right, so he's building off the emphasis of God's power again with more chaos-like descriptions of nations raging and kingdoms tottering. We see the analogies of kingdoms in many ways could be just the changing of power on a global level at that time or literally rising up against Israel and God himself. But again, we see God's power on display as all he does as a response is utter his voice and the earth melts. This shows a level of God's power that no greatness of a kingdom, no amount of resources or soldiers can even come close to defeating God, as all he can do is speak and they are destroyed. In the same way, 2 Kings 19, all God did was declare with his voice that he would defend the city, and then the angel of the Lord struck the soldiers. So in this example, we see even for us now that God is a protector of his people, that we can look to God, whether it be by means of natural disasters, international war, political unrest, personal struggles, or whatever the case. We know that we serve a God who is all-powerful and that there isn't anything that God can't do. This truth should give us immense hope when we find ourselves in our own scenarios where things feel totally hopeless and where we feel powerless. We serve a God who is all powerful and whose power never weakens or runs out. The psalmist declares as he closes again in verse 7 that the Lord of hosts is with us, the God of Jacob is our fortress. I mean, I love that language, again, pointing in the hope that God is with his people, right, in times of suffering and trials, right, that he fights for his people, but also that God is our fortress. See, fortress is that next level of shelter, right? Like, this isn't just any ordinary building, but this was specifically designed for battle, right? And especially in those times, it was oftentimes elevated to get a good scan of enemy attack and be able to have an advantage both for attack and also defense. And so we see what does that mean for God as our fortress? Like when we think of like a structure for that purpose. And the answer is twofold. One, that trust in God is both secure and safe when we can run to him as our refuge and safety when the storms of life or enemies surround us. But also that God is on our side and fights for us. See in Deuteronomy 3:22, "You shall not fear them, for it is the Lord your God who fights for you." The Israelites were gearing up for a battle at this time and were reminded not to fear their opponents because God himself was fighting with them. In our immediate context, we are not walking into physical battles like this, but it's important to remember that if we're being attacked or persecuted in some way, or if there's a struggle that we're walking through, we can be reminded that he is the one leading and guiding in those battles. We can rely on him in the midst of our own struggles that we're facing. Romans 12:19 also says, "Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God, for it is written, 'Vengeance is mine, I will repay,' says the Lord." When we are facing, what we're facing may not be a physical battle, but it could be very relational. Like I think of maybe there's a tough relationship in your life where you just want to get even, you want to get revenge, right? There's so much hatred toward them because of how they've treated you. You just want to act out and get even and get revenge. Reminded that even in those situations, God is in control. And as the righteous judge that he is, vengeance is his, he will repay. And we can trust that God is working, that he is fighting for us so that we don't have to. That's a tough thing to surrender, right, in those moments. But how cool is it that the all-powerful God of the universe is actually on your side, that he is near you, and that he fights for you. Back in 2015, the town of Moore, Oklahoma, had experienced their fifth tornado from 2010 to 2015. Thankfully, from what I could read, in that particular tornado, there wasn't really any loss of life, but it just created a lot of devastation. But a lot of the struggles that came with this tornado was this feeling of frustration. The worst of those tornadoes was back in 2013, where 212 people were hurt and 24 people were killed, with about 1,000 homes left totally destroyed. So after this tornado in 2015, people were asking that question of, like, why us? Like, we've experienced 5 tornadoes in, like, 6 years. This is crazy. We keep losing people. We keep losing homes. We're spending all this money to rebuild, and then another tornado happens. There's, like, all this frustration happening. So they're questioning, why are we going through this? Feeling totally frustrated, powerless, hopeless. And I have a picture on the screen I want to show. I think this is really cool. There was a high school student that was kind of walking through the area and saw this cross that was on this power line in the middle of the town. And this high school student posted this picture and said, "Just found this after the tornado, God is with us. Just found this after the tornado, God is with us." Right, this is a high school student. This is so cool. And so you see, like, really in the midst of this terrible situation where the people of Moore, Oklahoma were feeling totally hopeless, overwhelmed with the amount of loss and devastation that they had seen over the years with all the natural disasters that they were facing, they were given this reminder that not only is God present with them in the midst of this devastation, but also we kind of see God's power on display. Like, I don't know how that got there. That's a really big cross. Like, no one really put that there. And so kind of even in that wreckage of that, seeing God's power on display and reminding the people that God is with them. And even to the extent that this high school student posted this, was really able to voice that and be that, give that picture of God being with them and showing his power in that situation. Right, when fear and sadness and frustration were the paramount emotions that they were going through, that reminder served as a way to encourage them in the midst of their suffering. And so let me ask you this. Do I trust in God's power when I feel powerless? Do I trust in God's power when I feel powerless? When your situations feel totally hopeless, do you believe and trust in God's power in that situation? Or better yet, even if he doesn't act, if he doesn't come through, can you trust that God is still good in the midst and that he is working in you as you trust in him? All right, so our second point is when we are powerless, God empowers us. Lastly, third point. When chaos is all around, God gives peace to us. When chaos is all around, God gives peace to us. We close here in verses 8 through 11. It says, "Come, behold the works of the Lord, how he has brought desolations on the earth. He makes wars cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the chariots with fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress." So as the psalmist transitions into God's peace in the midst of the chaos, he again speaks to God's power first. He says, "Come, behold the works of the Lord, how he's brought desolations on the earth. He makes wars cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow, shatters the spear. He burns the chariots with fire." Right, we see the psalmist's eyes are in total awe and worship of God. Like, he is heralding to anyone that can hear, "Come, behold the works of the Lord." Like, look what God has done. This is our situation. We were totally hopeless and powerless. And yet this is how God came through on his promise, how he's faithful, how he's all-powerful, how he's good, how he's our refuge and strength and this very present help in trouble. Look how God showed up. And he gives those examples of how, right? How he's brought desolations on the earth. He makes wars cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the chariots with fire. In the way that God fights for his people, we see God win his battles through these descriptions. This language is very significant because bows, spears, and chariots were the main instruments for battle at that time, right? These were the most dangerous weapons. And so in all cases, he renders these tools completely useless to their original design and intent by destroying them. Right? God's ability to destroy all these weapons again points to his power, that even when there's total chaos and there's all-out war, his power is above all kingdoms that this world has to offer, right? All the means in which bring those kingdoms to power are rendered completely useless in comparison to God's power. So we see God's power in this, that he is above all these kingdoms. And yet we give this response here in verse 10. He says, "Be still and know that I am God. I'll be exalted among the nations. I'll be exalted in the earth." Be still and know that I am God. Man, this is so hard to do, right? Like, I mean, our culture that's so driven on getting things done quickly and having things now and finding the solution as fast as possible, or even just the worry and anxiety that happens when things don't go according to plan. It's hard to have that trust of be still, right? That command. Yet you can almost hear the gentleness of God's invitation for us that we would be still and know who he is, right? We see all these characteristics of God, that he's our refuge, our strength, he's all-powerful, he gives peace, right? So we see that gentle invitation to be still and to know that he is God. So the psalmist is going into this worshipful moment of like, hey, everyone, come behold the works of the Lord. Like, look at what he has done. Look at how he defeats his enemies, how he's greater than every kingdom and renders weapons useless. Because God is so powerful and so in control of the situation at hand, would we just surrender? Because God is so powerful, right? He's inviting us as a response to his power and his presence for us to just rest in who he is. The gentle invitation for us is to be still and know that he is God. He's going to be exalted among the nations. He'll be exalted in the earth. Right, this picture of his name being above every name that we just sang just a few moments ago. So when we rest in who God is and trust that he's in control of the situations we're in, man, what incredible peace that follows in that. The picture of resting in God ends all sense of striving, trying to muscle things on our own strength, instead opening our closed fists to just make it happen and to solve it on our own, and instead to open our hands and to surrender it to him. And again, the psalmist closes in verse 11, mirroring verse 7, again, identically. The Lord of hosts is with us, the God of Jacob is our fortress. Again, what a powerful statement to end, right? As the psalmist is reflecting on who God is in the midst of suffering and chaos, right? He is reminded that God is his refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble, who runs to his people's aid, who is active and not passive and distant, whose power is greater than anything in the world, despite the chaos that we see as a result of sin or the brokenness in this world that we experience because of the consequences of sin. And that even in the midst of all that, we can be reminded that we can be still and know that he is God, and that he is with us in our fortress when our worlds are crumbling around us. So as we look to close, here are three different ways that we can take refuge in God. The first one is ask God for his help. Hebrews 4:16 says, "Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need." So we know that God is our refuge, our strength, and a very present help in trouble, right? And because that's true, the best thing we can do through prayer is to ask God for his help, right? Like if he's the one that has all the answers, if he's all powerful, right, we ought to turn to him. And because we know God is who he says he is, this verse in Hebrews suggests that we can in confidence draw near to God. We don't have to doubt if God is going to come through or not, because we know that when we ask him for mercy and grace in time of need, he will be there to provide. And that's exactly what we ought to do. So ask God for his help. The second, abandon false refuges. Abandon false refuges. Psalm 118, 8 through 9 says, "It is better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in man. It is better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in princes." The psalmist says it right there. We can't take refuge in anything else because it will guaranteed not satisfy. It's going to fall short of its promise to help, and it's going to disappoint us. This is true especially of our own self-sufficiency and trying to do things on our own. But the psalmist even mentions trusting in princes, right? We have a very intense political season coming up in the next few months, and we have that question of whatever candidate you may vote for or wherever you lean on the political spectrum, right? It's important that we cannot place our ultimate hope in a political candidate, right? Our refuge can't be in money or the stock market. It can't be in our favorite celebrity or our favorite pastor or Christian speaker or our family, right? You name it. Our refuge can only be in the God of the universe, and only in him can we truly find refuge. Lastly, our third point is awe in who God is. Exodus 15:11 gives us this awesome example of this as Moses says, "Who is like you, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like you, majestic in holiness, awesome in glorious deeds, doing wonders?" Like Moses, would we just be in total awe of who God is? As the psalmist called us to earlier, would we be able to just be still and know that he is God and rest in his character and delight in who he is? When we do this, will we experience God's peace as a result when we rest in his power and his presence as our God? We see in Psalm 46 that when we experience hardship, God is our refuge and strength. And that God is a very present help in trouble. And that though chaos is all around us in the world we live in, we can live without fear because God's presence is near us. We can also rest in that in spite of the brokenness and craziness around us, we can look to God's power when we feel hopeless and powerless. When it seems like there's no way out or no possible outcome in our situations, we can trust that God is all-powerful, that nothing is impossible for him. And even in that, we can trust that God will act on that power. And even if he doesn't, we can trust that he is good in the midst of it. And lastly, we can be still and know that he is God because he is with us in our fortress. And because of who he is, we can trust in him, for he will be exalted among the nations and in the earth. He is worthy of our praise, our worship, and our trust.